This is the Voice of America broadcasting in special English. From Washington, here is the news. Space news. America's Apollo 14 astronauts climbed into their spaceship a short time ago as preparations continued for their launch at 20 hours 23 Greenwich Mean Time. The countdown is going well. Skies over Cape Kennedy are mostly clear, but rain moving from the west may reach the area at launch time. Space officials are hopeful the weather will not delay the launch. This morning, astronauts Alan Shepard, Stuart Roosa, and Edgar Mitchell had their final medical tests. Doctors said they were in excellent condition and ready for the trip to the moon. Astronauts Shepard and Mitchell will make man's third landing next Friday and spend almost 35 hours on the moon. They plan to make two long moon walks while astronaut Roosa orbits the moon in the command ship Kitty Hawk. Splashdown will be in the Pacific Ocean February 9th. Immediately following this newscast, the Voice of America will bring you live coverage of the launch of the Apollo 14.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 14, the fourth Apollo mission with an objective of landing men on the moon. This is Norman Guerin in the Apollo News Center in Washington. The countdown has been progressing on schedule at Cape Kennedy. Now to Cape Kennedy and VOA correspondent Rhett Turner's description of the launch of Apollo 14.
Well, just as we signed on the air a minute ago, the countdown was held. We are holding at 8 minutes, waiting for a rain shower to hit the Cape. We've been watching it for 1 hour as it's been moving in from western Florida. We can see the rain out behind the vertical assembly building to the west of our position, and it is slowly moving toward us. We were, all of us here at the Cape, were almost making bets on how fast it would move through. And sure enough, it hasn't hit here yet. It's just a typical rain shower. We don't think it is dangerous, but there could be some electrical interference in it. And so the count has been held at 8 minutes, and that is the spot at which we stand right now. From this moment on, we will be progressing beyond the 20-hour, 23-minute mark for liftoff. In other words, we were to have lifted off about 5 minutes from right now. That has been delayed at least 8 minutes, which means we're now down past the 20-hour 30 mark, approximately. With me here at Cape Kennedy is our familiar friend and NASA engineer, John Hammersmith. John, are you ready to get wet?
I'm ready to get wet, Rhett. I was wishing I could get up there and push these clouds back.
Yeah, there was the speculation they should go ahead and go early.
I would have liked to have been able to push that button early. I surely would.
But the procedures called for hold. All of this is very carefully planned ahead of time. Everything, there are things going on right now, automatic sequence processors and checkouts, which must be performed, so the hold is necessary.
That's right, Rhett. We cannot go too early. The time that we set for the liftoff is the earliest possible to give us our proper conditions.
Proper countdown and procedures processing.
Well, also at the other end, Rhett, if we leave too soon, we have to make too many adjustments during the flight to compensate for it.
All right, John's going to be standing by with me to give us more information, particularly on the performance of the Saturn V rocket. Here at the launch pad site, we're exactly 5 kilometers back from the Apollo 14 launch vehicle. And Antares and Kitty Hawk perched on top. It's sort of cloudy out there before us right now. If you're watching on television, wherever you may be, in some 40 countries of the world, with ground stations for the commercial communications satellite. You may be watching this with us, and if the color looks just a little fuzzy now, that's because there's no sunshine. It's rather cloudy. The weather conditions have been of a questionable nature all day, and as we've reported earlier, we were going to stand by and watch. It's considered, for those of you who are interested and understand different types of weather actions, a cold front has been in the process of moving through the Cape Kennedy area all morning. It's been moving a little, the actual frontal passage has been just a little slower than all of us anticipated, especially the weathermen and the launch engineers in flight control. With frontal passage, all of the cloud cover, which is down at about 3,000 feet, here's Jack King in launch control.
The checkout of the spacecraft system.
No, launch control.
Had an aircraft aloft in the area during the full progress of the final countdown, and we were advised at the 10-minute mark in the count that it appeared that one particular cloud cell coming across the Indian River, that is coming west over the launch pad area, appeared to have rain in it and some potential, and it was reaching up to altitudes of some 15,000 feet. As a result, the launch director, Walt Kaprian, determined that we should hold. We're going to remain in this posture at approximately the 8-minute mark to try to be no more than some 10 minutes away from a launch attempt, as long as this is possible. We are going to be advised by the flying aircraft of conditions and hopefully be able to get a forecast that things will look better in 15-minute increments. That is, when we get a go from the aircraft, we would be able to launch some 15 minutes later. So we do not have a firm estimate at this time. However, the aircraft commander has advised that he feels he will be able to give us one in a short while. That is our situation, standing by at 8 minutes and 2 seconds and holding. The Apollo 14 crew has been advised. They are also standing by in the spacecraft. It is possible we may get some rain in the area shortly from this same cloud cell that we were concerned about for the launch attempt. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
Okay, there's the word from launch control itself. Jack King is the commentator from Houston after liftoff. You'll hear the voice of John McLeish, and of course you'll hear the capsule communicator and the astronauts as they clear the tower. We're waiting for the rain shower to pass through, waiting for aircraft to measure it, to check it out for any sort of electrical activity. We talked to Al Shepard about 2 weeks ago before he went into what is called the Health Stabilization Program, in which he is isolated from the rest of society for the most part to make sure they don't pick up any little germs before they take off to the moon. And we asked him to describe for us those last few minutes sitting there on the launch pad. Here's the way Al described it for me.
The last few minutes is definitely minimal. The switches that have to be thrown by the crew have already been thrown. The systems have been pretty well checked out. There are a number of small functions that have involved throwing switches and reading specific instruments just to assure ourselves at the last minute that everything is still in good shape. But really, it's kind of a quiet time, the last few minutes.
But you got to keep busy so that you don't get nervous or something, don't you?
I don't know how anybody could possibly stay busy enough not to get nervous at a time like that.
Mm-hmm.
As you pointed out earlier, of course, there are some communications checks the last few minutes that are made.
Do the simulations, do the countless rehearsals that you conduct really put you in a point of complete relaxation and calm other than just the knowledge that here we go?
Perhaps I've misled you. I don't think anybody that's flown has been completely relaxed and calm since the year one. And I don't know any other way to reduce that to a minimum than the way you've just suggested. As a matter of fact, I think that using these simulators and the realism that's provided in the use of them is such that you sort of get nervous when you think about crashing even with a simulator, that it is that effective a tool. And they really give an individual a feeling that says, well, you've been there before, kind of a thing. You have the feeling that you've been landing on the moon before, you've been taking off from the Cape before. That, of course, is not completely true, but it gives you the feeling that this is the case, and that helps to reduce the concern that everybody has.
Mm-hmm. Really, it's a relief once you're off and going, isn't it?
Yes.
I can hear your voice right now during that first part of the liftoff from your first flight. I've heard it so many times. We'll be hearing it again. Thank you very much, Al.
You're welcome.
Now let's go to launch control again and Jack King.
If we had to remain in the hold longer, we would have to recycle to an earlier mark in the countdown. But we can remain here at the 8-minute mark for approximately 1 hour from the time the count was held. Our situation as far as the clouds are concerned, from the latest advice from the aircraft, is at its earliest, these cloud conditions might be able to pass through this area in about 15 minutes. If at the end of that time the aircraft could give us a good forecast that we would be fairly clear for 20 minutes beyond that time, it's very possible the countdown could be resumed. However, we expect to be in this position at the present time for at least 15 or 20 minutes. We remain at T-minus 8 minutes, 2 seconds, and holding. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
There you have the last word again from Kennedy Launch Control, at least another 15 minutes. And in that time, may I say to everyone listening to us around the world, your correspondents at Cape Kennedy are going to be standing in the rain. It's beginning to approach the Kennedy Space Center area there, the actual outer boundary of the compound from the west, and we're going to be on the air right here waiting through it. We'll try to put all of our paraphernalia out in the open on the sands of Cape Kennedy under cover, and we'll attempt to continue on with you here through this hold, which will go for about 15 minutes. You heard the voice of the man who was the first American to go into space. 10 years ago, in May 1961, Alan Shepard lifted off in the first Mercury-manned flight on a suborbital mission into the South Atlantic. And it's been quite an experience for him. It's changed his life. And we also recorded a conversation with him about that.
Al Shepard, Captain, United States Navy, the first American to go into space, and now you're on the way to the moon. Just for our listeners, Al, tell us just a bit about your background. What part of the United States do you come from originally?
Well, I come from New England, state of New Hampshire, actually. I was born there, went through high school in New Hampshire, then went away to the Naval Academy for my undergraduate training, joined the Navy, started flying, and I've been flying ever since.
And you were one of the original Mercury 7 astronauts. Do you remember anything interesting about how you were selected? Did you know the other six at that time?
I knew two of the other six that at the time of our selection, but I don't know. It was a fairly involved process. They looked inside our brains, they examined our bodies, and looked at our background, and kind of put everything all together.
Do you think it's changed now in the current selection process?
It's pretty much the same. There's been, as perhaps you know, there's been emphasis in the early days on piloting ability, and in the later days on scientific background as a experience prior to being selected. I think this certainly reflects the advance in technology associated with spaceflight over the past 12 years since the original selection. But the selection process is pretty much the same. I think it's a valid one. You take a look at what a guy's specialty is, first of all. You take a look at how well he has performed, and if he's performed well in his own specialty, it's a pretty safe assumption he's going to perform well as an astronaut. Mm-hmm. And you take a look to see how healthy he is. It's pretty much the way we do it.
Has this 10 years passed quite fast for you since your first flight?
Oh, tremendously, yeah. And been an extremely busy time, of course, for all of us, but the time certainly hasn't dragged. It seems like only yesterday.
before you became commander of this crew and began specific preparations, you were the chief of the astronauts over there in the headquarters near here. Mm-hmm. Just summarize your activities there in running that area for several years throughout the rest of the Gemini and Apollo programs.
You know, actually, there were two of us involved, Deke Slayton and myself. Deke was also in the original group. And during the time period to which you refer, Deke was kind of responsible for the equipment and the airplanes that we fly, the training equipment and so on, and I was kind of responsible for the administrative functions and problems of the astronauts themselves, and the two of us kind of worked together to handle those activities in those days. It was primarily an administrative office type function, although I did stay active in flying airplanes. Mm-hmm. And in keeping up on the general development of spacecraft hardware.
And you and Slayton were both part of the group which selected new astronauts, weren't you?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. It must be exciting to be ready to go again.
Well, I think it's exciting, yeah.
Is it?
It's a little too early to really start the adrenaline flowing, because if I did, I wouldn't make it to the end of the month. I don't have that much adrenaline.
Okay, good luck.
But we're happy about it. We're looking forward to it.
Good luck, Al, throughout the mission.
Thank you.
The voice of America's first astronaut in space and the commander of the moon flight Apollo 14, Navy Captain Alan Shepard. And there is our, we recorded that about 2 to 3 weeks ago before the astronauts finished their final preparations here at Cape Kennedy. I might remind all of you listening at this point, this is the Voice of America's worldwide broadcast of the launch of Apollo 14. The launch has been delayed due to a passing rain shower, which is about to go through the Cape Kennedy area. We're at 8 minutes and holding, so it will still be at least 10 minutes from now before liftoff, according to the last word we heard from Jack King, the voice of the launch control, right next to us here on the sands of Cape Kennedy. With me is NASA engineer John Hammersmith, Mrs. Rhett Turner, and we will be describing whatever happens. John, what impresses you most about the events up to this point?
Well, right up to this point, I was very much impressed by the smoothness of this countdown.
Here's launch control.
By the clock, the launch vehicle test conductor, Gene Sestile, has just advised all the support elements for the three stages and instrument unit of the Saturn V that the best estimate at this time is this hole will continue for another 15 minutes. He also pointed out to his test conductors for the various stages that they should be ready when they are alerted to be able to pick up the count at the 8-minute mark. That is our status. We're awaiting further word from the aircraft that's surveying the clouds from the top, and we remain at T-minus 8 minutes. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
John, there's that last word. Another 15 minutes, according to launch control.
That's
you were saying.
Right. That would take us up to a total of 23 minutes from now, Rhett, at a minimum.
All right. Continue that comment.
Well, I was just saying that up to this point, I was impressed with the smoothness of the countdown and the fact that we just haven't had any hitches like this. It's really ironic that we have to come right up to the 8-minute mark and then hold.
Yes, this has been an unusually clean countdown, according to Rocco Patrone and the engineers.
This is one of the things that that just isn't under our control, at least not for the present. We hope someday, you know, that we would be able to control the weather, not
this
just
space
for rocket
program,
launches, but for,
yeah.
for other purposes, too.
This space program is one of the things that might help us eventually control the weather.
Well, that's right. From the material that and the data that and the investigations that are being conducted in our Earth orbiting program, we do expect to gather the type of data about the atmosphere and its dynamic characteristics that should enable us to predict and possibly one day control the weather. But for the present, that's kind of a gleam in somebody's eye, I think, Rhett.
Okay, we have time to hear from some of the other men who will be on this mission. Next is Command Module Pilot Stuart Roosa, a young man from Colorado and Oklahoma, and I was very happy to record this conversation about his background several weeks ago.
Stuart Alan Roosa, Major United States Air Force, astronaut, Command Module Pilot, Apollo 14. Stu, this is your first time into space, right?
That's correct.
Tell us just a bit about where you come from and your educational background. What part of the United States were you born in?
Well, I was born in Durango, Colorado, and I actually left Durango at a fairly early age. My father was employed with the Bureau of Reclamation, and at this time we moved, I'd say generally, throughout the western part of the United States for several years, and then settled down in Oklahoma, where I essentially grew up. I finished grade school, all of my high school, and 1 year of college in Oklahoma. And then at this time, I went to the University of Arizona for a second year of college, and then entered aviation cadets. And my field of study was engineering. However, my first love was flying. I always has been. As a boy, I always fascinated with airplanes and models. I had models all over my room. And during World War II, of course, I went to every aviation movie I could find and built all of our models.
And you would have just been a teenager then during World War II, right?
That's right. Let me see. 33.
You wouldn't have learned to fly by that time, I don't think.
No. I did not have a chance to fly. I was dreaming of flying at that point and flying my models.
This is a typical story among American boys, isn't it? Is this love of aviation beginning in the model building stages when you're 8, 10, 12 years old?
Well, I can't speak for everybody else, but it certainly was for me.
When did you learn to fly?
Okay, and then during high school, I was in the Civil Air Patrol, and at that time, they did not give instruction in the Civil Air Patrol. I'm not sure what the regulations are now, but I got a little flying time in light aircraft, and you needed 2 years of college to get into aviation cadets. So as soon as I completed my 2 years of college, and in between a few working for the Forest Service in the Northwest for a couple of seasons. I was a smoke jumper one season out of Cave Junction, Oregon for the Forest Service.
You got a nickname of Smokey then, didn't you?
That came up on Apollo 9 when I was Capcoming, and I was nicknamed Smokey there because of my previous connection with the Forest Service.
How many jumps did you make?
I made 12. And I finished up that season and had my 60 hours and actually applied for aviation cadets from the Northwest. I left Oregon and went down to the friendly recruiter and no one to join the cadets, so went to Oakland and went through all the tests and passed them and got a class assignment in December of 53. Mm-hmm. And it started me on the road to my wings. And then I was assigned to what your first choice, as far as I'm concerned, was a fighter squadron out of gunnery school to Langley, Virginia, and flew 84Fs and F-100s and made a flight to Europe in F-100. And I've had two things that I wanted to do. One was to finish up my degree, and the other one was to go to the test pilot school at Edwards. And I did get both of those in, actually in that order. The Air Force has a program under which you apply, and if accepted, you can go back to school on active duty and get your degree. It's called Air Force Institute of Technology program. I applied for this and was accepted. Went back to Colorado and got my degree in aeronautical engineering.
Mm-hmm. When?
From 58 to 60.
Yes.
And this was, 5 years after I'd been in the Air Force. I went back and finished up my degree. This was 1960, and then I went to Japan.
I would assume that as an active jet pilot, you became interested in the manned space program the minute you heard about it, huh?
Absolutely. I've wanted in the program ever since they announced Project Mercury.
Then how did you apply and how were you accepted?
Okay, well, see, the route at that time to be accepted was to be a graduate of a test pilot school, either the Air Force School at Edwards or the Navy School at Patuxent. And everyone that had been selected up to that time had been a graduate of the school. So my next goal was to go to one of those schools. And my assignment out of Colorado was to Japan, so I came back 2 years later and applied for a test pilot school, was accepted at Edwards. That was in 64. And I finished the school, stayed at Edwards working in fighter test ops, and fortunately NASA had a selection, and so I applied for that in the fall of 65 and spring of 66 found me down here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Stu Russo, and good luck throughout the flight.
Thank you.
That was Command Module Pilot Stuart Russo, and he is the man who will stay in Kitty Hawk as The Antares craft goes down to the surface. All right, we aren't wet yet here at Cape Kennedy. The rain shower has passed us just slightly to the north, and some of the droplets are hitting the launch pad area. John Hammersmith, you listened to an announcement from Mission Control.
That's right, Rhett. He said that they were getting some rain out on the pad itself, although we haven't felt any here at some distance from the pad. It does appear that the area just trailing this particular cloud cell that they're watching is clear. That's the way it appears right now. And if so, then it shouldn't be too much longer before we should be able to resume that count. They're maintaining themselves in a state of readiness to resume the count at 8 minutes and 2 seconds.
Here's launch control. Let's listen.
8 minutes and 2 seconds at this time on Apollo 14. We're standing by for further advisories from the National Weather Service's aircraft, which is surveying the cloud conditions in the area. Just a matter of a minute or two ago, the director of flight crew operations, Deke Slayton, called in to Al Shepard in the spacecraft and mentioned to Al that at least it's more comfortable up there than it was in the old days. Al reported back, "Oh my, yes." He also added to Deke that we're in good shape up here. We're standing by for further reports, holding 8 minutes and 2 seconds. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
And there's our status. You see, we will be at least another 10 minutes, possibly another 20 minutes until liftoff at the earliest, as we're watching the rain shower pass by the Cape Kennedy area. So far, those of us, the several hundred or possibly, I think there was over 1,000 newsmen this time, those of us watching from Cape Kennedy, haven't been sprinkled 5 kilometers back from the launch pad, and it looks like most of the shower may be moving around us to the north, although it has caused some rain on the rocket itself. The last man of the crew of three is astronaut Edgar Mitchell, and we recorded this conversation with him before they began their final preparations here at the Cape.
Ed, this is your first flight into space and our first acquaintance with you as an astronaut. Edgar Mitchell, Commander, United States Navy, Lunar Module Pilot for Apollo 14. Tell us just a bit about yourself. Where do you come from in the United States originally?
Well, Red, I was born here in Texas, in the Panhandle, as a matter of fact. Grew up in Texas and New Mexico. And since I finished my early schooling, have lived all over this country, mostly in the Naval Service. And I call Artesia, New Mexico, my home. However, I haven't lived there in over 20 years, but I still have many friends there.
Did you go to grade school there as a child?
No, I went to high school there.
Went to high school there. And where'd you go to college? How'd you get your education?
Well, I took my first bachelor's degree at Carnegie Institute of Technology, which is now Carnegie Mellon University. I took a second bachelor's degree in aeronautics at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. Mm-hmm. And a doctorate in astronautics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
You are a doctor of science, right?
Doctor of science, that's correct.
Now, that's in, you say aeronautics and astronautics. What does that make you an expert in?
Well,
one brief word.
I'm not sure it makes me an expert in anything. I think it may qualify me to try to become an expert in something.
Tell me about your service career. When did you go into the Navy?
I entered the Navy in 1952. As a matter of fact, I enlisted in the Navy.
Had you learned to fly before that?
Yes. I started flying in 1945.
And you were a kid at home then, weren't
you?
Yes,
that's right. I started flying before I could legally have a learner's permit, although I flew with my uncle, and subsequently obtained a student pilot's license and a private license and a commercial license eventually. But I've been flying since 1945. I enlisted in the Navy in 1952 and entered the Naval Air Service in 1953, started through training there.
Mm-hmm. Were you flying jets before you entered the astronaut program?
Yes, I was.
Where?
Well, the last active duty Navy squadron I was in was a heavy attack squadron in the Pacific. We were flying from carriers at that point. From that, I went to test and development work at China Lake, California, before I started into my postgraduate education.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, from the postgraduate education at MIT, I went to a management position with the Navy in the ill-fated MOL program. And from that, went to Edwards for a year with the Air Force, mm-hmm. and then here to the astronaut program.
Ed, it impresses me that you have one of the most extensive academic backgrounds, particularly in bringing you right toward this kind of work. I'm sure it must give you great confidence in the kind of work you're doing now, doesn't it?
Well, that particular set of credentials was not arrived at accidentally. It was very planned from the first beginnings of the space program to bring me right to where I am today. And I'm very fortunate, since a great deal of luck and timing is involved, those things all worked out in addition to my plan to be here.
Well, good luck throughout the rest of the flight, Ed Mitchell.
Now you've heard from all three of the space pilots who are sitting in in their command module, Kitty Hawk, on top of that great rocket. I'm always so impressed every time we're here 5 kilometers back from the pad and we realize what's happening out there. Here's launch control.
Seconds, but planning to resume the countdown several minutes from this time. From the latest advisories from the weather aircraft, it appears that the higher altitude clouds will have cleared the area by our now new planned launch time. We still will be launching through some cloud cover, but the top of these clouds will be 10,000 feet or less. This is the latest forecast we have from our weather advisory via the aircraft. We're at T-minus 8 minutes and 2 seconds and holding, but planning to resume the count in several minutes. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
As I was saying, it's at this moment, those three men are right before us there in the Kitty Hawk on top of that 100-meter-tall rocket, and they're very calm, as Al Shepard pointed out, with some jitters or some element of being keyed up. But they're ready, waiting patiently, and at this point, so are the men in launch control, so are the men in mission control. The people doing all the pressured work at this point are the pilots in the sky doing all sorts of measurements of the rain, seeing how high up it goes into the cloud cover, radar operators taking measurements on the thickness of this particular rain cell and reporting back to the spacecraft meteorology group, and then feeding this to launch directors. And right before us, the men who are on the way to the moon are just sitting calmly and waiting. John, what else did you hear during the other announcement there?
Well, he pretty well recapitulated the situation, Rhett. I might add, by way of a little bit of interpretation, we talk about these things as rain showers, and it sounds as though it's the rain that's concerning us. That's not the case. A little bit of water wouldn't hurt us. It's the electrical activity that's possible. Here comes
launch control.
We have had a change of several minutes on resuming the countdown. The launch team has now been advised by the launch director we will resume the count at 55 minutes past the hour, which is some 7 minutes from this time. We'll be standing by, expecting to resume the count in some 7 minutes from this point. 8 minutes and 2 seconds and holding. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
That means we will have a liftoff at about 3 minutes past the hour, 21 hours GMT.
I was saying, Rhett, that we're really concerned about the electrical activity or the possible electrical activity that's associated with certain types of rain showers. You may not be getting lightning out of a batch of clouds, but flying a vehicle through them may be enough to trigger something, as happened in the case of the Apollo 12 launch, which you may remember.
John, standing by with us in our Washington studio is our associate, Norman Guerin, and we've been reporting all of the activity here, primarily the anatomy of a rain shower, since we came on the air at quarter
looks
past.
Looks like our turn's coming now, Rhett. It looks like a big black cloud heading our way.
So let's call,
pad is clear.
Let's call Norman in with us and see if he has anything to add from the Washington studio perspective.
We'll return to Cape Kennedy for the launch of Apollo 14, Rhett Turner and John Hammersmith, but first, a summary of world news. This is the voice of America's worldwide coverage of the launch of Apollo 14. Now back to Cape Kennedy and correspondent Rhett Turner.
We're still waiting for the clock to pick up for a launch about 3 minutes past the hour. So we're still about 10 minutes away from liftoff, if that launch picks up according to the latest announcement we have had. This is all contingent upon the rain shower. I feel some rain, John Hammersmith. It's beginning to hit us.
I didn't feel a thing, Rad.
I should just imagine that it went away. Okay, we hope that there will be enough of an open space between rain cells, as the weathermen call it, between that which just passed out to sea, past the Saturn V rocket, and another which appears to be coming up behind us from the west. And the launch officials believe that that's the thing they're going to be working for. Here's launch control.
2 seconds by the clock. Test supervisor Chuck Henschel has just polled some of the key elements involved in the countdown, requesting their go status to pick up the count in about a minute and a half from this time. They all report ready, and we are standing by. Expecting now to resume the count in a little less than 1.5 minutes. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
There was Jack King. We are going to pick up that launch control, that countdown in just a moment. And as we talk to you, we're beginning to get a few more drops of that stuff which doesn't exist for launches. At least that stuff we wish didn't exist. It's called rain. And we're going to put up an umbrella and just stand here on the sands with everybody else and get wet and watch and enjoy it. Right?
Yes, I didn't want to get this umbrella out, Rhett, but I had to.
All right. You heard the last report from Jack King there that they do expect to pick it up, meaning that the small shower coming this way is not expected to be of consequence to delay launch at 3 minutes past the hour. Now, that's still 9 minutes from now, if I am looking at the clock correctly, approximately 9 minutes from now. So we will stay on with our worldwide broadcast from the Voice of America for that liftoff as it occurs.
Rhett, we might make an amateur judgment here on the ground as to the weather conditions. It looks actually quite clear behind these dark clouds that are now right over the launch pad. And that makes me feel rather optimistic.
Launch control.
Resumed our countdown. T-minus 8 minutes and counting on Apollo 14. We're still keeping a close eye on our weather conditions at this time, but Launch Director Walter Caprian has made the determination to resume the count. This should put us with a liftoff at 3 minutes past the hour if all continues to go well. We're now starting the chill down of the engine chambers on the third and second stages of the Saturn V launch vehicle. This is one of the critical elements and has to do with hold times. The chill down has to last a precise period. We feed in extremely cold helium into the engine chambers of both the second stage and third stage to condition them for the very cold liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen that will be flowing into the chamber when they're due to ignite later during the powered portion of the flight. All is still going well as far as launch vehicles, spacecraft, and the three astronauts on board. Coming up in the 7 minute mark, 7 minutes and counting, this is Kennedy Launch Control.
And that was the word again. We're watching the clock count down, 6:50 now, 6 minutes and 57 seconds and counting. You know, when Al Shepard climbed aboard, the pad commander, a man named Gunther Wendt, who has been with the astronauts since the very beginning, gave Al Shepard, the oldest man ever to go into space at the age of 47, just as a joke, he gave him a cane. Just as a joke. And Al has taken a lot of kidding about his age and being the oldest man to go into space, and we ask him about that in a recorded interview.
Al Shepard, you look to be in mighty good shape for this flight. It was almost 10 years ago that you began the American manned space program with your first suborbital flight in Mercury. How do you keep in shape? What do you do?
Well, I primarily jog, although it's rather distasteful to me. I find that jogging a couple of miles every day that I can is perhaps the best, quickest way to keep me in reasonably good condition. I lift a few weights, not anything real heavy, but
You still do a lot
of weights.
You still do a lot of flying too, don't you? To keep your air.
I don't think flying per se is a conditioning process. I really think that you have to, and now the experts agree that you really have to force the cardiovascular system to operate at a pretty good rate for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes in order to keep generally a good condition.
There's been a lot of good-natured teasing, which you've responded to, about the fact that now at the age of 47, you will be the oldest astronaut to go into space, a bit older than some of the Russian cosmonauts who were in their mid-40s. You're now 47 years old, and you look good. The doctors say you're good. Tell me about the kidding. Anybody give you a hard time?
Well, I don't really mind about the kidding. I think probably before too long, perhaps another 3 or 4 years, there'll be somebody who goes into space that'll be older than I currently am. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't mind being the first astronaut over 50 in space.
It's a matter of how you are in your head and how you keep your body. Huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, Al, good luck throughout the flight. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.
And now, that was recorded in Houston several days ago. Every now and then, a ray of sunlight breaks through this cloud cover as the clouds are dissipating slightly, and it hits that bright white rocket. If you happen to be watching on television, it is a fantastic sight. It's quite moody watching this launch, too, because looking to the east from our vantage point on the sands of Cape Kennedy, we're now looking at the first rain shower to pass on out to sea. Here's launch control. Launch control.
Key elements as far as spacecraft operations are concerned, and received a go all the way down, including three strong goes from the three pilots on board the spacecraft. The abort engine lights now have come on as cue lights for astronaut Alan Shepard on the left-hand side, and as we come up on 3 minutes and 30 seconds. 3 minutes, 30 seconds and counting at the launcher. The launch operations manager now has told Alan Shepard, we are go, and on behalf of the launch team, wishes him Godspeed. Alan Shepard came back and said, thank you very much, we'll give it a good ride. 3 minutes, 13 seconds and counting, we'll be coming up on the automatic sequence shortly. Mark, we have launch sequence start. The automatic sequence is in, coming up in 3 minutes. T-minus 3 minutes and counting. We are still go at this time with Apollo 14. Skip Chauvin has just asked Lunar Module pilot Ed Mitchell to bring on the tape recorder on board the spacecraft. We're at 2 minutes, 46 seconds and counting. As we're on the automatic sequence, the various tanks in the Saturn V launch vehicle, those propellant tanks in all three stages begin pressurizing so that the propellants can be forced into the engine chambers at the appropriate time. Coming up 2 minutes, 30 seconds and counting. Shepard has been alerted that he will be making his final guidance checks shortly. Second stage LOX tank beginning to pressurize at 2 minutes and 20 seconds and counting. Still go at this time. Minutes, 10 seconds. We are still go. We have taken the environmental control system off external. We've gone on internal with the environmental control of the spacecraft. 2 minutes and counting. We are still go.
That's Jack King.
Tanks in the Saturn V still continuing to pressurize. The sequence for the ignition of those five engines in the first stage of the Saturn V will begin at 8.9 seconds. We're now 1 minute, 45 seconds and counting. Still go with Apollo 14. We'll go on internal power in the Saturn V launch vehicle at the 50-second mark in the count. At ignition and liftoff, we'll have more than 7.5 million pounds of thrust pushing the space vehicle off the launch pad. This is the heaviest Saturn V space vehicle to be launched thus far. Coming up on the 1 minute, 20-second mark. 1 minute, 20 seconds and counting, still go at this time. Third stage tanks now are pressurized according to our Stratus board here in the firing room. 1 minute, 10 seconds and counting. This is Kennedy Launch Control coming up in 60 seconds. Mark, T-minus 60 seconds and counting. Still go with the count. First stage tanks are now pressurized as our status board gives us a rundown on the automatic sequence. 50 seconds and counting. We've now gone on internal power on the internal batteries of the Saturn V as the count continues. 40 seconds and counting. Alan Shepard reports that he's performing his final guidance alignment, the final maneuver the astronauts perform before liftoff. 30 seconds and counting, Stu Russo just said, thanks, it's been a good count. 25 seconds and counting, we are still go. 20 seconds, guidance alert, the guidance system now going internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8. Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
The rocket's lifting
launch
off.
Permit. Liftoff. We have liftoff with Apollo 14.
It's going.
3 minutes past the hour.
It's clearing the pad.
The tower is clear.
Houston is controlling. Have good thrust and all five in 16 seconds. Pitch and roll program started. 14 maneuvering to a proper flight course.
Looks perfect. Here comes the roar across the sands of the Cape. It is going into
seconds.
The clouds.